Hunt Safe and Bow Hunter Education Update. Let me know if you can't hear, please.
Good morning, Tania Bethke, Division Staff Specialist over Education, over here once again, and R3 Coordinator. I'm going to be reporting out on just some of the changes we've seen in HuntSafe and in our Bowhunter Ed classes. Just over the last couple of years, we've changed some regulations in 2018 that have had an impact on our numbers, and we've had some new programs we've developed that I'd also like to share with you. So this first graphic shows us our traditional HuntSafe class number of classes, that's in blue. And so, you know, in 2019, we had 132 traditional classroom HuntSafe classes offered. And that number stayed pretty static over the years. Orange, independent study field day. So students have an opportunity to take an online class and then come in person for the field day for the hands-on component. And again, that stayed somewhat static, though we've seen an upward trend in the number of participants going online. And then bow hunter education. In 2018, the requirement to take bow hunter ed was removed here in the state of South Dakota. And subsequently, we've seen a decline, of course, in the number of people taking that class. So in 2019, we had one bow hunter ed in-person class. So not that it was ever, you know, a whole lot of, you know, we didn't have hundreds of classes at any point, but we don't have a whole lot of that left anymore. So this shows us the difference between traditional HuntSafe, and the independent study field day. This is the number of people that we certify in each of those opportunities. Again, our numbers are relatively static. We've got about 2,600 folks that have come into HuntSafe in the traditional class in 2019, and about 314 going online for that opportunity to certify in the independent study and then come to us for a field day. Now, we do have a new opportunity for HuntSafe. This is pretty exciting. We have HuntSafe in the schools being offered. So we've done a lot of outreach. We've used our law enforcement officers. We've used a lot of staff that work heavily with our school districts to advertise this opportunity. And we've started holding teacher trainings to get our teachers trained up as HuntSafe instructors. And so in 2018-2019, we were just getting started, and we had seven instructors in seven different schools certify about 200 students in HuntSafe as part of their class day. This is us not competing with football in the afternoon or with softball or basketball or anything like that. This is us offering it as part of the physical education class curriculum. And that's really exciting for us. Not only does that start gaining us more instructors for our HuntSafe program, but it also gives all students across the board access to this curriculum, and that's pretty exciting. So we started offering HuntSafe and archery instructor training back-to-back for teachers, and just last year we certified an additional 32 instructors. So those are people that are able to bring the curriculum back to their schools, and so we're still waiting to see what our 2019-2020 numbers look like for that school year. But we know that our numbers are increasing and the interest in the program is increasing across the state. As far as online HuntSafe, we've got under 16-year-olds. Online is trending upward for those participants, and online opportunities for HuntSafe are also trending upward for those over the age of 16. So in 2018, we allowed those that are over the age of 16 to just go online. They didn't have to do the in-person field day, and we're seeing that that's becoming more and more popular. So that's a good thing that we're offering. Now let's talk a little bit about bow hunter ed. These are back to 2015 and up through 2018 when that requirement for bow hunter ed was removed. You see that we only certified 11 people in bow hunter ed last year. So again, with the requirement going away, the number of people getting certified is decreasing. Our online students are also decreasing. So again, this orange shows over 16-year-olds. And blue shows under 16-year-olds that are going online for their bow hunter ed certificate. So pretty clear trends there. I would say that even though participation in our online and in-person bow hunter ed certification classes is decreasing, the opportunity to engage in archery education is definitely staying the same, if not increasing. And I want to show you some of the opportunities people have to engage in archery in other ways. So in 2019, we had statewide community archery programs. So we had 170 different kinds of classes that reached out to the public in different ways, whether it was at Outdoor Campus West for an archery program, or if it was my outreach coordinator going out to a community and offering an archery program. We had 170 of those that reached 204 participants, and the breakdown of those participants were about 1,000 adults and about 3,000 youth. And then we had NASP, and NASP is National Archery in the Schools Program, and that's continued to grow through all of this. So last year was our biggest year in NASP. We had 309 schools participating, and we had 13,611 students doing that program. So statewide, this is a program that's vastly popular with schools across the state of South Dakota, our tribal partners. There are amazing competitions that they host, and it's just remarkably well-established in the state. The archery park was also built within the last couple of years out at Outdoor Campus West, and this is the user averages between January and May of 2019. And so as you take a look at this, we've got users, you know, 20 people on a day, 60 people on a day, and as those months got a little bit warmer starting in March, you had 100 folks coming out there in a day to use that archery park. So use of that facility is consistent. What I want to know about are these people in these 60 people in January that were shooting archery. Like, did you lure them in with steak? Like, how did you get them there? Oh, yeah, absolutely. So it's been a vastly popular opportunity in the state, and we're excited to continue reaching out on archery, regardless of whether the education requirement is in place or not. So big takeaways with HuntSafe. Traditional HuntSafe is remaining static. We've got online HuntSafe increasing in youth and 16 and up audiences, and HuntSafe in the schools is growing quickly. With bow hunter education, the in-person and online formal classes have declined, but our NASP and informal archery education opportunities have increased. So with that, I'll take any questions that you may have. I know there may be more discussion on these.
Questions?
All right, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. All right, let's do the Department of Tourism and Pheasant Hunting Marketing Efforts.
I'm the Strategic Communications Director for Game, Fish, and Parks. And at a recent meeting earlier this fall, the commission got to discussing pheasant hunting marketing and our efforts in that area and what has been done in the past. So we reached out to our friends at the Department of Tourism, and this morning we are joined by Kirk Holstein and Mike Gushes. And we have prepared a presentation for you on those pheasant hunting marketing efforts. So with that, Kirk.
All right. Thank you, Jenna. Commission Chairman, Secretary Hepler, thank you for having us here today. Many times our residents and our stakeholders don't get to see the actual marketing that we do, since most of it is placed outside of our borders in our key markets. So we're pumped to be able to show some of this to you. And I know there's a work group being formed. So this is, keep in mind that this is the 10,000 foot level. We're gonna be doing a deeper dive at that time when we get into the work groups. So today we're primarily gonna be talking about pheasant hunting and the promotion of it and what we've done with some of our recent marketing strategy, But we also want to touch on how our department, with the Department of Tourism and Game, Fish, and Parks Department, have worked together and collaborated on our messaging on pheasant hunting. So we're going to dive right in. To begin with, just to kind of talk a little bit about our both the department's missions and how in some ways they really do align, but then in other ways there's other things to consider and other priorities. So in a nutshell, you can see here without reading the full mission, our job is to inspire travel. And whether that travel is in-state or from others coming from out of state to South Dakota, we're just trying to get them inspired to come here. When you look at Game, Fish, and Parks' mission, which you guys are all already familiar with, I won't read through that. They do align in a lot of ways, but there's a lot of other priorities that have to be considered. The management of the habitat, the wildlife, the natural resources, resident versus non-resident, and the availability of those resources. So the missions are very close and they align, but in some ways there's a lot of other priorities on the Game, Fish, and Parks Commission that they have to consider. So tourism's impact last year, we had 14.1 million visitors that traveled to the state. We had, those travelers spent $3.98 billion while here. And just to put in comparison, the $287 million spent by pheasant hunters, that comes from the 2017 survey by Southwick and Associates. To put that a little bit into perspective, you can see here the share of overall visitor spending by pheasant hunters is about 7%. And that's only looking at direct visitor spending. So we took the 2017 data for the full tourism impact and then the Southwick and Associates study from 2017, and that is the share that comes from pheasant hunting. We also wanted to kind of build a little bit of context about overall participation in hunting in general, and you can see here the national participation rate is 4% of the U.S. population, but that's not distributed evenly throughout the U.S. So our key targets that we'd really want to look at for prospective pheasant hunters to come into the state is those highlighted areas, basically the central U.S. They more than double participation rate in comparison to those on the coast. So if we're going to be targeting, those would be the areas we'd want to spend our money for prospective pheasant hunters. We also ran this through our internal model, and what this does is we can basically build in demographics, behaviors, travel interests, and then it goes out and finds millions of others that have similar behaviors, whether that's online browsing hunting sites or subscribing to hunting magazines or purchasing hunting equipment. That is, you can see it is very similar to that last study, which was the National Survey of Fishing, Hunting, and Wildlife. And especially those first five states have the strongest likelihood to come here to hunt: Wisconsin, Nebraska, Iowa, and Minnesota. The next slides I'm going to show you is basically a new technology and a new program that we're using, and it monitors the movement of devices. So how many in the room have a cell phone in their pocket today? Thank you. So the far majority of us are carrying these phones around with us. This is a proprietary software that they use to monitor the movement of devices. And so what I'm going to show you is just the impact of the one of the discussions that the commission had a few meetings ago was, how does the opener compare with the rest of pheasant season and the rest of visitation to South Dakota? And this will show you some of the impact from that. Keep in mind, this isn't total visitation. This is about 2%, less than 2% of overall visitation. And you can see here, these are the spikes. Every one of those highlighted areas is a Friday. So we've got Memorial Day, May 25th. We've got Sturgis Motorcycle Rally the weekend before the full week of the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. And then we've got August 31st, Labor Day. And then you can see right up there at 40,000 devices came. And to put a little more description behind this, they have to travel over 75 miles. They have, in this case, it's they stayed over at least one overnight, so they stayed 2 days. And it's non-commuting. So if this device every day went from point A to point B, those were excluded from the study. So these are travelers that went for the purpose of going somewhere and staying overnight on Pheasant Opener, the Friday before Pheasant Opener. So very significant in the overall scheme of things. And this is this past year, 2019. Those first three highlighted areas were those major blizzards that shut down I-90 in the spring, which was a major impact. You also didn't see the lift in June and July due to the spring weather. I mean, it was still really wet, cold. Farmers were not getting out into the field. They were still planting into July. So in this case, Pheasant Opener was even more significant to our overall travel. It was the top, even over the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. And when you drill this down even to a city like Mitchell, and the impact that that Pheasant Opening, the Pheasant Opener for non-residents, it is significant for all of our communities, especially on the eastern part of the state. Look at the lift there for Mitchell. And now I'm going to hand it over to Mike. He is our brand marketing and our global director of marketing and brand strategy.
All right. Thank you, Kirk. Thank you, commissioners, for allowing us to come present to you today. So we're not going to go a lot into the why or how the placements we have with the limited time. We'll just really keep this brief and look at the what we've been up to or what we're doing. Just a reminder, a good overview, right? What is the brand? I think this is something that as a department you guys have discussed. I mean, a brand is very much a concept. That's, you know, it's not game, fish, and parks. It's not necessarily South Dakota Department of Tourism. For the consumers, for travelers, this is something where they look at South Dakota and any interaction they have with South Dakota, that's our brand. So that's across department, across all efforts. It's all of our places, our resources, our people. So marketing, we'll keep a real simple, quick definition here. It's not Wikipedia simple, but maybe a step above with dictionary.com. Marketing is the action or business of promoting and selling products or services. So what we're trying to do. So and how that varies marketing from our brand. So marketing is how we're trying to get that brand story out there. Kirk touched on some of the data that we have. We have a couple different programs in place that are pretty advanced, really, where we're able to interaction with our website, emails, that sort of thing. That's where then we start feeds into our data, our database, and we're able to output these demographics based off that. Another that we have, too, is we actually work with the department, Game, Fish, and Parks, securing previous non-resident licenses. So that's something that we can input into our system and, again, create these lookalike audiences based on hunters that we know actually visited and came here. So it's a little bit of a stereotype, but that's, you know, at this point, who the hunters are. Male, 35 to 60, income 80,000 plus, married. Preferences, 2 to 3 trips per year. The thing, too, that we've really seen and what we'll start, we've started really emphasizing in our marketing message, and I'll talk to you here in a little bit, is, you know, for the hunter, this really is want to get away for socialization with friends and family. This is one time of year where friends, you know, far past, get together. They plan the trip far out in advance for families. It's the reunion. That's where we see that large spike on that opening in season, open season, and how that has that impact on South Dakota. So repeat experienced hunters do not need much planning time, but that's, again, not to say they don't need much planning time, but not to say they're not planning ahead. So that's something we're really seeing of late and something that we're going to shift our tactics, the timing of our placements. We'll see that shift. So media consumption, I think this is something that may surprise some people, you know, thinking of older generation, but social media is the highest indexing media channel to reach these, followed pretty closely by radio. So, you know, you hear a lot about digital, print, that sort of thing. Radio, an oldie, but still a goodie, and then digital, of course, and all the various channels we have there. Something else that tops out, fills out the top three for ways we try to reach them and the best ways too. So our outdoor specific marketing efforts, like Kirk said, you know, leisure travel is our main focus. Obviously for this state, you know, hunting is something that has an impact, it's a niche. So this is where, as far as our specific niche marketing efforts in regards to this, in 2019, we had about more than 32.6 million in impressions we generated from a campaign that had an investment of about $300,000, time frame being year round. Some of these placements that we have, Pheasants Forever, so speaking a little bit to the R3, yeah, so for an impression, just to clarify what that is, so that would be, you know, someone on a weather, you know, online, you see the web, the display banner, that's an impression. With our print magazines, one reader, subscriber, that's an impression. Social media, of course, you know, someone seeing that post, that's an impression. Also with radio, someone that ad spot, you know, depending on the audience size, that would count. That's where we figure impressions from. So some things partnerships we have as part of that $300,000 spend, a major one for us, and it's interesting too, I mean, as far as R3 and the conservation, Pheasants Forever has been as a group, we've been partnering with them on a national level for a few years now, three or four, going back a little bit before my time, and really that's probably our biggest spend. That's, you know, $100,000 plus, $125,000 campaign we have with them. That allows us access to the Pheasant Forever audience through print, through digital, through social, Pheasant Fest, all their different resources. Also content, you know, they're really getting into the content game lately and producing videos, short form film, that sort of thing. And that's something that we're working with them on as part of the sponsorship.
Yeah.
good to know. Thank you. We'll take that back. We'll work on that. Yep, I'll let him know. So Pheasant Fest, this is something too, again, another opportunity where we have to work with Game Fish and Parks. We have a South Dakota Pavilion as part of our greater sponsorship with them. And so with this space, that's where then it's great to have the resource of GF&P there to answer those questions. That's where we've been able to bring over. We worked with Benny Spies over the past couple years. That's where an opportunity to get him out there in front of his fans, help draw attention to our setup there. All the various things that they have going on at Pheasant Fest, which is, you know, the premier upland convention in the nation. You know, we have a really, really good presence throughout. One that we'll have this year that we're adding to is, here's just an example of an 8-page booklet. So beyond the pavilion that we have, we're also gonna have an 8-page booklet that's gonna be distributed at Pheasant Fest this year. Just again, A to Z, highlighting why someone should come and hunt in South Dakota. Here's an example of a 2-page spread. So we are in every issue of Pheasants Forever and Quail, or the Pheasant Journal, and the Quail Forever journal that they have. Here's an example for you. One thing too, this is where, so it's find more than pheasants. It's not about the brood counts and that sort of thing. This is where, again, we're really highlighting on the social aspect, the emotional side, and touching on that. This one, we have an older gentleman and his dog. You know, gear, dogs, those are the things that really seem to resonate. So this one, the audience might, you know, skew a little bit older here, but we do have opportunities now where you'll see other points that we figure in families or a bigger group, again, trying to change that demographic a little bit. And this is updated from what we currently what we have been doing up to about 2016, which was Take Me Hunting, focusing on the dogs, a real successful campaign for us. So here you see, you know, just the sentiment, some feedback that we had gotten. Your new ad that appeared in the fall issue of Pheasants Forever magazine brought tears in my eyes. The ad is the best outdoor ad I've ever seen, seriously. The look combined with the words Take Me Hunting resonates so soundly. So we had a very successful campaign. Now we're utilizing our award-winning, what we've had for on the leisure side, which is we just won a national award this year for, so we're really excited about. So again, just really trying to make sure that, you know, what we do does resonate emotionally with the viewer. Some other examples for you. We'll have to work on that dog included. Update those. But again, the groups and really focusing on that. Here's an example. So we have a pretty extensive community co-op program where we match dollar for dollar, applicants. Here, peer working with them, obviously for this community, it's a big deal. This is something, another way for us to, again, highlight and reach out to this niche audience. Some of the other partners that we have that are focused on the outdoors, Watertown, Aberdeen, Huron previously. Yankton has started some efforts down there, I know, is in regards to hunting through Casey and the CBB. And then CSP. We've had a long time partnership with CSP, I think going back to maybe 2012, a pretty healthy program with them. And some of the tactics that we include in these channels, which is a nice thing, working with these communities and us pooling resources, this is where we can really have some fun. So this past year, we brought in Ben Lieber as part of a promotion, former Viking, K-Fan, radio personality, influencers, podcasts, gamification units, where it's almost like duck hunt, right, where you're hunting pheasants in the field. You know, that was an ad unit that we had for Pier through this program. So to call out Custer State Park, too, a quick side, not pheasant hunting, but just, again, to show a way that Department of Tourism and Game Fish and Parks here working together to try to promote our outdoor to the outdoor audiences. Here's an example of a rich media unit that we would have had this past year. So with Custer State Park over the course of this time, you know, we've with us pulling together, you know, have been able to put probably $1 million plus, you know, as far as marketing that park. So this year alone, theirs and ours, it's about a $320,000 campaign that we had in 2019. And what that does too, this is a Google Trends, just a quick snapshot. You know, as far as brand and building that awareness and that brand identity, there's not a ton. This chart is looking at overall internet search for Custer State Park. And you can see it's something that we're on a positive trend there. We're gaining a little bit as we've been going, starting in about 2016 with that. Television ads. So we had Outdoors and Sportsman Channel, National Buy, weeks of August 12th, August 19th, September 2nd, 9th, and 16th. 1.43 million impressions through that, and we'll share that 30-second spot with you now. Oh, no sound. Let's see. Oh. I'll keep going ahead while Chris does his black magic on that. Here's some digital displays that we have. Good? Okay.
I want to run through corn and sorghum.
Oop. That's on me.
I want to run through corn and sorghum fields, across shelter belts and streams, flushing pheasants all along the way. I want you to take me hunting beneath the endless skies of South Dakota.
Round up your friends, gather your gear, and get ready for some of the world's greatest pheasant hunting right here in South Dakota. Plan your hunt today at huntinsd.com.
And really within this too, I mean, we do have, I think, something to call out, especially when it comes to the co-ops. We, you know, within that outdoor audience, we really do have the two different hunters, right? The public lands hunter that we're targeting through a lot of different avenues, and then also to the lodges, you know, and that private reserve hunter too is something that we see a fair amount of activity from. So display units, you can see here where those are targeting. Again, really kind of going with the map that Kirk showed earlier. 4.25 million impressions through those. Audio podcast. Podcast is something we got into just a couple years ago, and it's really, really been successful. The interesting thing there is, as of all our efforts, we probably hear more so on this than anything else. Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, that's getting seen by 50 plus million. We hear a lot about that, but we have more people reaching out to our office saying, I heard you on Meat Eater podcast. You know, can I get a guide? So we just got one just a couple weeks ago, even. A gentleman writing us saying, don't have plans to travel to South Dakota yet, but listening to the Meat Eater podcast, they brought up the free vacation guides. I've had friends previously travel for pheasant hunting, and hopefully I can make it up there sooner than later. And that's a win, because that's one of those where pheasant hunters, I mean, it's something where getting someone to travel out of state for hunting is a big deal. I think it's something of 11% of the population is willing to do so. Other examples, working with Scout Look and Hunt Stand, a trip and gear giveaway that we had, where they could come win a hunt, win gear, gun, other related items. Some ones that we've done previously have included Kent Herbeck, Tim Londer from the Twins, Chad Green way back when he played with the Minnesota Vikings. Speaking of the Minnesota Vikings, we also have ending a three-year partnership with them where anyone at US Bank Stadium, any home game preseason or regular season, if it wasn't the Vikings and they would have lived up to expectations and hosted home playoff games, we would have been there as well. Luckily, they didn't. It saved us some money. So we have end cap scoreboards. You can see, again, some messaging there. And the last home game we actually had a Custer State Park takeover of that space. Rooster Rush, and a popular visible in-state program that we have that we put about $15,000 to that you see the signage around. This is an opportunity for communities to reach out to us, get grant money for advertising, along with some gear, things they can use to decorate the community. So now turning it over to Jonna and email marketing.
Yes, thank you. On the screen, you'll see some examples of email marketing that we have done through the communications team. Targeting late season is great season for pheasant hunting. Encouraging people to come out in that December before the first of the year when pheasant hunting ends. And also, as they mentioned earlier, Game Fish and Parks mission is different than tourism's. And so our emails also include things about rules and regulations, safety in the field, things like that. This specifically is an email that we just sent this year. Late season is great season for pheasant hunting in South Dakota. So we sent that to both residents and non-residents. We're able to target them individually through our email addresses. And so for non-residents, we encouraged them to purchase their license now, come out for a late season hunt, and then use their second 5-day hunting period to come back for the opener in 2020. For residents, we reminded them that snow was on the ground, freeze was setting in, and it was a great time to take a relative out to get some pheasants instead of eating leftovers after Christmas. Here's a message that was sent before my time with the department, actually, but it's a great message that, along with Tanaya's message that you heard just a bit ago about R3 and recruiting, retaining, and reactivating hunters, this message from Secretary Hepler encouraged people to bring someone out hunting with them and to engage others in our outdoor heritage. So that's a great message that we're gonna look at repeating in the future. On social media, getting the message out around hunting season. Our social media guy, Nick Harrington, does a great job. This particular message was about youth season and that special season that we have for youth and then residents only, so we target that specifically. And again, late season. New Year's Eve presents a great opportunity to sneak outside and have some fun outdoors. So those were good messages that got started a lot of chatter on social media, had a lot of impressions, and created some good discussion online. Here's some more examples of posts that we put out. So we post a lot about pheasant hunting. Now to the brood count handouts. You actually will have this in front of you, and we'll turn it back over to Kirk for this.
Yeah, so these were specific efforts done in the years where we saw some lower brood counts, and those survey results went out. So Game Fish and Parks and tourism worked together to really get out the fact that even in years where our brood count may not come back as high, we are still the nation's and the world's best destination for pheasant hunting. So we distributed this on all of our channels, as did Game Fish and Parks. and those you have in front of you there. And we'll plan to still use this going forward. And then another instance where we really kind of worked together and did a large push was during the non-meandered waters up in the Northeast. There was a lot of misconceptions that the lakes were closed, and I know Kevin and Emily worked really hard on this with us as well. So our teams came together and built a full campaign that just tried to combat some of that misconception. So we were in four different publications. We shot out a ton of emails. It reached 15 different states. And here's just some examples. A similar one-sheeter saying, there are lakes open. We do want you to come and fish our lakes to try to get over that roadblock there. We are open. You can see here, open water. And it just showed that people are fishing in the Northeast and there's plenty of access, regardless of what you might have heard. And then this was exciting from the State of the State address from Governor Noem 2 days ago. And this is something we feel really good about. I know Game Fish and Parks does as well. This year, Game Fish and Parks and the Department of Tourism will be partnering to not only ensure that people in South Dakota are enjoying their great outdoors, but also that we're attracting others to come to our state and do the same. And so with that, we'll take any questions that you may have.
Secretary Hepler.
Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. I just want to reiterate the last statement is, I think what the governor's looking for us to do is go beyond status quo. And the programs we have now are incredibly effective. They are. But we need to go beyond that. And so when I had a conversation with Secretary Hagan, we're going to sit down as a team, and that's part of what the commissioner wants to do. Clearly, the governor does, figure out what do we do next, because even with these efforts, we're still losing hunters. And so it tells us we're not as effective as we think we are. So we need to engage that on. And we've been somewhat hamstrung from an agency perspective, but our funding source limited us how much money we could put toward marketing. That's fortunately changed after 5 years of pushing hard. We got a Pittman-Robinson Modernization Act went through, and the president signed it here. It's part of an omnibus budget. We snuck it in there. But what it allows is two different levels. It allows additional money coming off the top for Pittman-Robinson, about $5 million, which will run through a multi-state grant program. So that's new money, but that's going to be where all the R3 efforts from across the country, whether it's state or whether it's NGOs, other people are going to apply for. But as important to me on our normal funding level, it's going to allow us then to spend more of those monies in marketing. Now, collectively across the country, it's about $107 million more that states can use. And I realize that's can use. It's a priority. I mean, Tom's program, there's a lot of things we do with that money, but it allows us that opportunity. So I certainly would expect, I'm assuming the governor would expect us to, you know, go beyond what we're spending now from both agencies and truly tackle this, because this is, you know, I mean, the governor wants a second century. This is what it means right here. And those graphs, I've heard it from her many, many times. We need to get aggressive and creative on this. You know, in the past, we kind of focus on the messaging side of things, and you guys did the marketing side of things. Now we're going to get a chance to go play on the fun side of this thing, the creative side of this thing, and be the marketing. So this partnership's going to be real. And so for the commissioners listening in and the commissioners here, we're completely committed to this. And it's going to be fun because there are metrics you can show pretty easily whether we're being successful or not. So we're looking forward to this partnership. And Commissioner, we'll work closely with you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. That is what's prompting us to look at this changing landscape. And it's a good presentation and a good start. Big subject, all sorts of parts. Far more than we can probably deal with just today. Well, obviously, I guess. But just to get a sense of how maybe important it is, I forget, is your number that pheasant hunters spend 200 million? I forget the number.
287 million.
287 million. And so then the economic impact, and that's every year?
That was the analysis from 2017 from Southwick and Associates.
And then, so the total impact, of course, would be some multiple of 287 million. I don't know if it's 4 or 5, or it might get us to a billion. Is that
Yeah, that's just the direct spend. So if you talk about the multiplier effect and how that goes into wages and income and the supplier businesses, it would be a big number. I don't know what that number is off the top of my head.
So then, I'm sure there's a lot of ways to judge this, but I mean, what is the total budget for the Department of Tourism for marketing pheasant hunting? You know, if it generates $287 million of expense or expenditures and $1 billion or whatever it is of economic impact, as a good place to start, I'm just curious what the budget is at the Department of Tourism for marketing that business, and then what is it, if any, given restrictions, game fish? How much are we spent? What's our budgeting for marketing that huge business?
Yeah. So it's ebbed and flowed over the years, anywhere from $300,000 up to $600,000, depending on the efforts. Our media buy for the full year is about $8 million. The amount dedicated to pheasant hunting is about 4% of our total.
4%
Yep.
300,000?
Yep.
For a $1 billion business. So then the question becomes, who decides that? And who all needs to be involved in looking at that and determining whether we should increase that number and how we go about it, and who should pay for it, and I mean, who are the decision makers on that issue?
Yeah, when it comes to planning, as from the department side anyways, you know, we work together as a team. So from Secretary Hagen working with our outside agencies, Kirk, myself, the other directors that we have within the Department of Tourism, that's where we're setting our plan for the year. So for us in 2020, 2021, when we're looking ahead, you know, that's where we're looking at, you know, with our leisure efforts, everything we're trying to do between leisure, all of our various audiences, other audiences that we're, you know, focus on are families. What we call our wanderers and what we call our searchers, so young couples, older couples, you know, and that's where the outdoors is an aspect of that. That's one audience for us. So, you know, that's something that we set with our budget internally when we're looking ahead and trying to figure, you know, everything we're trying to do and all the business that we're trying to generate for the state.
So, and I know you're volunteered and you're going to be part of our work group, and we'll talk more about that here in a minute. And so it's going to be good for us to know who all should be involved and who the players are, and, you know, if we want to increase from 300,000 to, seems like it should be a lot more than that if we got a $1 billion business we're trying to run. And but we can sort through that later.
Yeah, and I think that's where these conversations, and it's great to hear too. For us, that's where, again, you know, our main focus is on that leisure destination, and I mean, it's something where tourism as a total, you know, it's, what are we looking at this year? Over $4 billion impact.
Those numbers are getting released by the governor.
Sorry.
Yeah. Not Mike.
Strike that from the. I gave a loose somewhere. No, wow. She'll surprise us.
Those are not official.
Talk about the Yankees now or something.
Exact number. So, I mean, that's where, again, you can see for us, it's a part, right? And that's where I think it's important, too, when we're looking, you know, at South Dakota as a group or this total effort now, you know, how can this increase?
So, you know, one of the things that prompted this conversation was Commissioner Whitmire doing an analysis of pheasants and pheasant population, and I think one of the issues is the sort of the permanent change of landscape, and so between farming practices and weather and, you know, the crops are in the ground a lot longer, there's a lot more cover later, and so, but yet there seems to be pheasants at the end of the season. So somehow we need to convince people that they should come later in the season. And so then, same question, I mean, who all would be involved, should be involved in crafting that message and determining how to get it out?
Yeah.
Well, I will be, going forward, I'll be our liaison to the commission meetings and that work group. So I'll be in attendance, and I'll for sure bring in, as needed, any other of our department staff to help as we go through that work group.
Anybody else have questions? Commissioner Whitmire.
Commissioner Whitmire, yeah, thank you for the presentation. That was very good. On the $287 million, I just I'm thinking I know under snowmobiles, under statute law, I believe if someone buys a new sled tomorrow, the sales tax generated goes into the sport in the form of maintaining trails and whatnot. Under statute, perhaps a breakdown of the $287 million where people are spending. I think I've seen that in some form, at least, where lodging and fuel, supplies, things like that.
Hunting equipment.
Hunting equipment, yeah. Exactly. If there was a breakdown of that $287 million, perhaps we could look at something if there's a chunk that we could, yeah. Secretary Hepler?
Well, and there's got to be unlimited cross-selling opportunities. I mean, if you're going to pheasant market, you ought to sell a fishing license, and I mean, there's all sorts of ways to go about this, but big subject over several weeks. So anybody else have anything for today? Great.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't know, I don't want to really put you on the spot, but and it's not really on the agenda unless I'm missing it at the moment, but could we just talk a little bit so about this work group that we're putting together and kind of where we're at, and it seems like maybe if we could set some deadline for March and get the group together and address these subjects. So yeah. I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but I know you're ready to go anyway on that.
Mr. Chairman, Tom Kirshner, of the Director of the Wildlife Division. So, Mr. Chairman, in respect to the work group, we put together, and I shared with you and the other commissioners on this work group that we will be putting together, just some of the quick topics of ideas that we talked about at the last commission meeting, and shared some of that information, and also the quick little PowerPoint that Commissioner Olson had put together on some thoughts and perspectives of questions to be asked and things that we need to evaluate with the work group. So first and foremost, I am happy to say that you probably have a much better leader that's going to be taking this on. This is going to be one of the main tasks that Emily Keel is going to work with within the agency and you as the commissioners in putting this work group together, and as well as Jonna from the communication standpoint, obviously several of us from in the department as well. So I believe our next step then is to populate that work group, make some final determinations who you all want on there. We did talk about a few of those individuals or entities to be part of that. And I guess what I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, is we will go back and sit down, visit more with Emily and John on this, and then get back with you and the three commissioners that volunteered to be part of this work group and final populate that so that we can put whatever information together to send out to those individuals if they're interested in participating, let them prepare and think a little bit before we set and hold or host that first meeting. And so if we want that meeting in March, we could certainly work with you over the next week, week and a half, and populate the work group and then put those arrangements together to start those discussions. And again, those are gonna range from things you talked about here today, from messaging, marketing, to we also talked a lot about the discussions on survey work and all those things. So I guess, Mr. Chairman, if that seems appropriate with you and Commissioner Whitmire in particular, you were also instrumental in this discussion, we will put the wheels under that bus and start moving down that road.
Yep, that's great. So thanks for that. And
sure.
People will know we have a plan for going forward.
Yep, and we'll put some more definitive timelines and some objectives and things to work on with the work group.
Okay. So what would you like to cover next here?